ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
By being with people who have sincere devotion, it comes naturally. Lord Chaitanya gave us a beautiful verse. Sadhu Sangha Sarva Sastra Kvai. That the most precious thing in all of creation is to associate with those who have pure hearts, those who are free of envy, free of selfish desires, those who place as the focus of their lives to love God or to love Krishna, and to be an instrument of that love in whatever they may do, wherever they may go. People who are on that platform, or people who honestly and sincerely are striving to come to that state, that is sadhu sangha. That is the association that will actually awaken those propensities within ourselves. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sajja kabunoi sravana de suditi dikoriya yudoi. That the eternal perfection, Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prem, love for the all attractive, beautiful Krishna, is within all of us. By associating with people who have awakened that love and who are on the path along with us for that purpose, and by chanting God's names in that company, then naturally that devotion awakens. I was just reading a book that no one in the world has ever read. Do you know about this book? Very well. It's a secret book. But it's a manuscript written by one of Srila Prabhupada's earliest closest associates, Shyamasundar Prabhu. In fact, Shyamasundar at the moment is in Lake Forest, which is just north of here. But he sent me a very rough manuscript, and I was reading parts of it. And I can't tell you details. You'll have to buy the book when it comes out. But I can advertise for it so that you're eager to do so. He explains how Srila Prabhupada came to San Francisco in January of 1967. And the scenario of Haight-Ashbury at that time. How many of you have heard of Haight-Ashbury? Please raise your hands. Well, in the 1960s, every single person in Chicago heard of Haight-Ashbury. Some people hate Haight-Ashbury, and some people love Haight-Ashbury, because it was the center of the whole Western world for alternative thinking. who are trying to establish peace, love, against racism, against war. And of course, the way they were trying to do it was many experimental processes. It was the heart of the hippie culture for the world. I remember when I was in Amsterdam in 1970, some hippies said that their ultimate goal in life was to go on pilgrimage to Haight-Ashbury. But for devotees, the ultimate pilgrimage is Vrindavan. And Srila Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan. It is a place where the pure lovers, it's the place where Krishna performed his loving pastimes 5,000 years ago. Where Sri Radha, the gopis, the gopas, Nanda, Yashoda, they all eternally live and manifested those pastimes long ago. And since that time, saints have given up all the pleasures and luxuries of life to live in that forest. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they were home ministers, prime ministers of entire kingdoms, billionaires by today's calculation. They were beautiful, they were learned, but they considered Vrindavan so holy that they left everything behind to live on the ground, on riverbanks, under trees, in caves, and considered this the greatest wealth of their life. They had thousands of servants and maidservants in their palaces, but they gave it all up and went door to door begging to get some wheat, add some river water to it, make it into a ball, make a little fire out of some dried cow dung, put the wheat ball in it, let it burn for a while, then they'd offer it to Krishna and eat it. This was how they lived. And created a culture. They wrote so many literatures, taking the essence of all Vedas, of all the world scriptures, because they were actually scholars of most of the great scriptures of the world, because they understood the oneness of God and the inclusiveness of bhakti, or love, love for God. And they revealed the most intimate pastimes of Radharani and Krishna in Vrindavan. And how to actually enter into that state of prema or ecstatic. And Srila Prabhupada was living right beside the Bhajan Kutir, or the place of the worship of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. And he left the holy place of pilgrimage, the real holy place of pilgrimage, to go to Haight-Ashbury. But he went on a different type of pilgrimage, because his pilgrimage was to give bhakti, give love of God to the people of this world. There was a little storefront overcrowded with hippies who were very confused. Most of them were completely intoxicated with various types of drugs. And he lived among them. He came alone to America. And he lived with these people. And they considered him their father, their guru, their leader. He didn't want anything from them. He just wanted to give and give and give. And he gave a talk. I'm going to tell you one little part of the story. Because he came to America on a cargo boat. Took about 38 days across oceans from Calcutta to New York. And now he's 71 years old, and he took the first airplane in his life from New York to San Francisco. Because he had a few students, and they actually bought him a ticket. The ticket on the cargo ship he got for free. He got this ticket for free too. First time in his life he flew on an airplane. And when he came down to San Francisco, he discussed what he saw on the airplane. One of the things is how there's so many clouds in the sky. But when you're below the clouds, sometimes it's very dreary and very rainy and very snowy. Chicago, you have these pretty nice experiences. But when you go above the clouds, the sun never stops shining. Yes? The sun's always shining. In the daytime. So similarly, Maya is like these clouds. But when you go above the clouds, Krishna's like the sun. Krishna's always there. Krishna's within everyone's heart. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayesha trinitish. Krishna tells, I'm in the heart of every living being. And he's also, through his energy, he's everywhere. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for that person I'm never lost, nor are they ever lost to me. One time, a devotee asked, in these early days, how do we see Krishna everywhere? And Srila Prabhupada was sitting at a little table and he had his eyeglasses and said, when you look at these eyeglasses, what do you think? And the student said, I think these are Srila Prabhupada's eyeglasses. And he said, and what do you feel? He said, when I think of you, I feel so much love for you. He said, so in the same way, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Krishna tells that I am the proprietor of everything that exists. All the universes, all the planets, everything within each planet is Krishna's energy. He's the creator, sustainer of everything. And ultimately, everything is his property. We may claim something as our property. But proprietorship means control. And if you really have control over something, nothing, no one can ever take it away. In the form of time, everything is taken from us, whoever we are. Sometimes young people really think that I'm going to live so long. But every young person, if they're lucky, they become old people. And when they're old people, they think, I'm still a young person. except I'm old. And then they realize the mortality of this body and the closeness of death. In London, I was with this lady. In London, if you do something excellent to the highest level, then the Queen makes you a knight. And then you become Sir. But ladies are not called Sir. They're called Dames. That's a female knight is a dame. So I was with a dame. Of course, in Chicago, it means something very different. It's not a respectable title. Swamis aren't supposed to talk like that, I guess. But from a British perspective, it's what I'm saying is a very nice thing. But she told the story, because we were speaking together on this stage. And she, when she was 5 years old, she was from Austria. And her mother and father took her to a railway station and told her, "We're sending you on a vacation with your sister." Her sister was 8. Said, "You're going on a vacation and you're going to have a really nice time. There's some wonderful people who are going to be taking you around and showing you places." And when they got to the railway station, there were 2,000 children there. And they were all being put on this train. And all the parents were telling their children that we're sending you on a holiday. And all the parents were weeping and crying with excruciating pain. And this lady, she said her mother and father were crying and crying and crying, saying, "You know, have a nice time. We'll see you soon." And everybody was crying. So they were suspicious. "What is this? What kind of holiday is this? Why don't you come with us?" The train went to London. 2,000 children. There were 2 adults taking care of 2,000 children. And when she finally arrived in London, her and her sister didn't know a single word of English. And they didn't know what to do. And about a half a day passed, and they were just sitting there, and there were crowds and crowds of people, and on loudspeakers they were calling people's names. And then 2 strangers just came, and they didn't speak a word of their language, and put them in a car and drove them off. This was a famous event, actually. What happened is, just before the Nazis took over these countries, the parents of the children knew that the families would probably die, and they couldn't leave the place. But they sent their children to London, 2,000. And just British people who understood what could happen agreed to adopt these children. So she was telling some of her story. And eventually she became an extremely successful lady. But she realized that nothing is mine. Now she's about 85 years old. And she was telling a story of when she was 5, as if it was just a couple minutes ago. That's the way time is. And that's the way the uncertainties of the world are. So when we're young, we have this illusion that let me just enjoy. But old age comes so soon. I have some experience. I'm 63 years old. And when I come back to Chicago, I see places where I used to go, and I think, oh, there, I almost feel like I'm still there. That is the nature of time. But these clouds of illusion, they keep us in this misconception that I am this body, those things in relation to this body is mine. But when we actually make spiritual advancement and reconnect with our eternal soul and reconnect with Krishna, the supreme object of the love of the soul, then we understand that yes, Krishna is everywhere. Because we see our beloved in everything. Even the love of this world, we hear so many songs. When somebody's really in love with somebody, or that love is causes heartbreak, then in every situation you're reminded of that person. Yes? If a mother's child goes through a tragedy, the mother sees her child everywhere, in everything. That's the nature of love. So when we actually taste the sweetness of Krishna's love, which is infinite and forever, when we awaken that inherent love that we have for Krishna, then we see Krishna everywhere and in everything. We see every situation as an opportunity to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, to love Krishna. So when Srila Prabhupada was there in Haight-Ashbury, in that situation, he was 71 years old. Everyone around him were in their early 20s. He had shaved head. Everyone around him had long, unwashed hair. But he had so much patience. Sometimes they would challenge him, stand up, completely on LSD or some other drug. They'd scream at him like a warrior. They'd say, I am God. You should surrender to me. They'd say that to Prabhupada. Prabhupada would... He would say, Prabhupada would say, oh, please accept my obeisances, God. Now sit down and listen to my lecture. And the person thought, he acknowledged I am God, so he would be very nice and he would sit down, then he would listen to the lecture, and then he would realize he's not God. So this is the kind of things he had to deal with. And from Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, he went to London. He was living with the Beatles in John Lennon's house. Then he went to India, and he was sometimes with millionaire industrialists, and sometimes with simple farmers and villages, and sometimes with prime ministers and big, big politicians, and other times with sadhus at the Kumbh Mela. Every type of person, every place. Then a few days later, he was behind the Iron Curtain in Russia, where he wasn't allowed to really speak to anybody except under strict surveillance. Then he was in Africa. He was with some of the very simple tribal African people, sometimes with the Indian people of Africa, Australia. It's an incredible book. Shamsundar just takes you right with him to all these different kinds of places to watch Prabhupada, to listen to Prabhupada. How he saw that Krishna was in everyone and how Krishna was in everything. And because he had that realization, how patient, how kind, how accommodating he could be to everyone, everywhere. Because he saw the hope that we all had. He saw the soul, the Atma, the living force within everyone, and the connection to God that we all have. And because he had so much confidence in our potential, he gave us faith in our potential. That is Sadhu Sangha. When we're with saintly people, because they see the inherent divinity and goodness within us, they can help us to actually recognize who we are and what is our real potential. When we just read about it, or just hear about it, it opens certain doors. But when we actually are in the company of people who really believe in who we are, beyond our egos and beyond our shortcomings and beyond our depressions and our anxieties and our mistakes and our so-called successes, all of these things are coming and going like the different seasons. That's a nice thing about Chicago. The seasons. Yes, it's like Shamsundar just came from Lake Forest from California. And he said how happy he is here. Because in California, he said, it's always nice, the weather. Yes? But he said, it's so nice here. It's cold and it's rainy. Because this differentiation is actually special. Krishna tells in the Gita, Matra sparshas tukonte yasitos nasuka bhukada. That this world, everything is changing. Happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, they change like the winter and summer seasons. In Chicago, we really understand the difference between the winter and the summer season. So we can get really good realization of this verse. It's worth living through 100 winters and summers just to understand this one verse. That everything in this world changes like the winter, summer seasons. But wisdom is to remain sober through all of these changes. To not be too affected by them. Because when happiness comes, we know that it's going to end. So we don't hold on desperately because we know we can't hold on to it. It's going to go. And when distress comes, we don't get so upset by it because we know it's going to go. The winter goes. Sometimes I think this winter was very snowy, yes, but it's gone. Where I live in Mumbai, there's five seasons. There's the summer, the autumn, the winter, the spring, and the monsoons. Monsoons is 4 months. And in Mumbai, the monsoons are extraordinary. At least a couple days a year, there's so much rain, the entire city shuts down. I remember one year I was there, it was on Janmashtami, Krishna's birthday. And it rained so hard. This was when we just started Radha Gopinath Temple, just a couple years. And it rained so hard that practically no one could leave the temple. Literally, the street in front of the temple was like a river. I'm not making this up. People were going in rowboats down the street. It was so high, it was almost to the top of cars. And people walking, it was like up to their chest. So all the airports closed down, all the trains, no cars could go. The city just shut. Nobody could go to work. But some of the people who just came just for darshan, they ended up there. It was still flooded the next day for Prabhupada. They were there all night. They all slept in the temple floor. They broke the fast at midnight and Prabhupada's appearance. And several of those people became devotees because they had nowhere to go. And just by that association, they became very transformed. These people are so nice. They just let me, they let everyone sleep there and they give everyone food. And but the winter, summer, rainy seasons, they come and they go. The amazing thing is the miracles we see at every moment. As I remember seeing this flood, massive flood. So much water, the whole city was underwater. And it was all coming out of one cloud, just a huge black cloud that was in the sky. And how this cloud, how much water is in it? Trillions of gallons of water. And the cloud that's holding trillions of gallons of water is floating in the sky. And a little breeze moves it. That's incredible. Yes, if we, you know, if Jai Jagannath Prabhu wants to bring some bottled water, he has to carry it, you know? And he asks somebody to help him carry, you know, to 20 gallons. But here's trillions of gallons, and it's just floating. That's nature. We are seeing miracles. When we see a cloud, it's a miracle of Krishna. When we see a human being, every human being is a miracle, whoever they are. But to speak of humans, even trees and grass. It's like really kind of like a double. Yeah, their mother and father, I don't know what they were thinking at the time, but you know, they just came together and these little seeds just kind of went from the father. It happened, it's not everybody, the same thing. Little seed goes from the father into the mother, and then the little seeds kind of emulsify, and they start, you know, and they start developing. Little eyes, little nose, little lungs and kidneys and pancreases. in our hearts, and then the brain. The brain is such a complex machine. No computer can compare to the human brain. And how much there's technology, you know, if somebody makes some software for computer, they're getting Nobel prizes and everything like that. But what is the human brain? The human brain can make computers and software. And in this situation, you know, these two little girls start forming in a lady, and she doesn't know what's going on. Yes? She doesn't have an architectural engineering plan. It's just happening by nature. And they're breathing, and they come out, and they're crawling, and they have the capacity to learn languages. They have the capacity to walk and to run and to dance. They have capacities to go to college and get PhDs and to laugh and to love Krishna and to share that love with the world. Incredible. Miracles everywhere. And no man could do this. And invent technology. We can try to send people to the moon and other planets. We can manipulate DNAs. We can't create a DNA. We can't create the moon. And we can't create the resources that make our rocket ships and everything else we do. This is how we see Krishna everywhere and in everything. And when we understand the miracle of life and the miracle of God, then we have faith in yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, that one supreme origin of everything that exists, that supreme intelligence, the father, the mother of all living beings, recently I was at our eco village. It's called Govardhan Eco Village. It's in near a village called Wada in Maharashtra, India. And we have some beautiful cows. And don't tell anyone, but we also have sheeps, goats, and donkeys, and dogs, and cats. And do you know what the names of the sheep are? Would you like to know? What's the sound that sheeps make? Say it loud. Louder, louder. Did everyone hear that? Yeah. Or ba. Anyways, they're male sheep, so we named one of them Babaji. Baba and Babaji. Because they go ba, ba, ba. Like, yeah. But what we did is we made a rule. Not exactly a rule, but a guideline. Because we have about 70 brahmacharis living there and about 50 or 60 family people. And we also have an orphanage with about 50 or 60 children. So we encourage everyone, minimum 3 hours a week, they should come and personally be with the cows. Brush them, feed them, play with them, whatever. And so everyone likes to do that. Because You know, the idea is to actually experience that these are Krishna's children, these are people. And since we made that guideline, every time I come, cows just love people. It used to be that they would kind of stand there and you'd go up and they would go, yes, yes, very nice. But now when they see a person, they come running to you and they put up their, you know, please scratch me. Because they have feelings. They love their little calves. If you show them love, they feel that love. It's no different than humans, except less sophistication and intellectual complexities in many ways. So to see that quality and that equality. Equality means to see a common quality. I don't know if that's what it means or if I just made it up. But to see a common quality that we all have. And what is that common quality, that equality? Vidyavanaya sampane brahmanika vihasti. That we're all children of the same source, of Krishna. We're all life-loving, pleasure-seeking, love-seeking beings. Wherever life, that is the quality of the living force, the soul. If we can see that within ourselves, we can see that in everyone, and we can see it everywhere. But if we can't find it within ourselves, we cannot see it anywhere. When Srila Prabhupada, whether he was in Kumbh Mela with the Nagababas and Sadhus, or not too much different when he was in Haight-Ashbury with the hippies, or whether he was with the industrialists or the devotees, wherever he was with, wherever he was seeing. He was seeing Krishna. He was seeing the ability for everyone to love God and to be happy. And because he had that faith in who we were and who what we could do, he gave us faith that yes, he's seeing the sun above the clouds that are covering me. That son of Krishna. And therefore, he could show us how to find that light through the chanting of the holy name. Krishna,
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
And he came to Chicago and gave us Kishore Kishore. And according to our state of consciousness, that's how we see everything. Because he had faith, he could awaken faith within us, in which we could actually experience God in the name, in the deity, and in seva, or selfless service. I'm so happy to see so many wonderful, sincere, beautiful people coming together here. Did I discuss what you asked me to discuss? Because sometimes I wander around in my talks. Yes. Thank you. Is there any questions? Well, the microphone is coming. This is going to be a wonderful book. Hopefully within a year or so it should be actually published.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much, Maharaj, for a beautiful class. Maharaj, in lecture you mentioned that those who are sincere and those who have that greater devotion with whom we associate, naturally will develop. Due to our family situations or like job situations, it practically becomes little difficult to get, and so we are just hankering, but you know, we are not able to do much services, neither we are able to, you know, go in person to, you know, yatras or something. So such cases, how should we get that sadhu sangha?
Hare Krishna. You cannot always change the world around you, but you can always change yourself. Whatever the situation, if we see an opportunity to serve, see the opportunity to humble ourselves before God, see an opportunity to forgive people for injustices, see the opportunity to rise above our own deficiencies, then that situation is a perfect opportunity for us. So actually the problems of the world are blessings if we respond to them accordingly. But in order to have that proper response, we have to have spiritual strength. By associating with people who give us that strength, by keeping regular spiritual practices that give us strength, then we will actually, and by utilizing the strength that we're getting, by living with integrity in all situations, then we can grow. The really great people in history, especially in spiritual circles, are people who pass through very turbulent, difficult times, maybe in their jobs, maybe with their families, maybe with their health, maybe in all kinds of situations. But they chose to go deeper in emotion. They chose to do the right thing, however difficult it may be. That is important. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Maharaj, how do we, in the association of those who reveal to us our highest potential, we receive so many instructions. And how do we develop the ability to apply those things when we're not in their presence and serve them in that separation?
Can you say again?
Yes, Maharaj, how do we develop the ability to apply the instructions and the, I guess, the mood of those with whom we're associating with, who are empowering us when we're not in their association, when we're by ourselves, engaged in our various services or doing what we're doing?
If we are sincere to try, Krishna tells that he will protect whatever little we have, and he will provide the strength that we need, if we're sincere. If we can take something in our hearts and sincerely try to apply it in our life, wherever we may be, God helps those who help themselves. So we have to humble ourselves to receive help, but then with the help that we receive, then we actually have to utilize it. One theologian gave an example that love is not about getting what you want. Love is about giving. He said, if we want to learn how to love, we have to come out of the cradle. The cradle where we're just getting, 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 expecting, expecting, and expecting. And when we come out of the cradle, we're not expecting anymore. We're giving. What we have received, now we want to share. Srila Prabhupada made it so simple. He said, just accept what I've given you. And accept it means to follow it. And then share it with others. And then we're never separate. If we have the inspiration of saintly people, we have the guidance of saintly people, and we're just sincerely, honestly trying to follow it, then we're never separated from those saintly people. It's a matter of sincerity. If we can be for long periods of time, that's wonderful, with enlivening, inspiring company. But if it's just due to the situation of our life, it's not so possible. We shouldn't make that an excuse. Rather, we should, if you take even a moment, if you take even a sentence of truth and put it into your life, you'll benefit more than having entire libraries of information all around you at all times. One time Prabhupada was in Calcutta, and a devotee was saying, Prabhupada, I feel so bad because I can't be close to you so often. And Srila Prabhupada said, of everyone in this room, who is closest to me? And everybody, you know, this person was thinking, Prabhupada said, who is the closest person to me in this whole room? And then he pointed to a little mosquito that was on his arm. He said, he's the closest person to me in this room physically, but he's simply creating a disturbance. But there may be someone thousands of miles away, continents away, who have taken some of those beautiful messages and inspirations and putting them in their life, and who's closer? Spirit, the mosquito or that person? So there is no limitation of geographical or even in time for those who are sincere. And that is something each and every one of us has the capacity to live by if we just believe in it. And we just humble ourselves before the grace of God. There's a beautiful poem. I'm going to end with a poem, but it doesn't rhyme. What time am I supposed to end? When people do that, that means I'm hopelessly already over time. But I will end with a little, it's like a poem. That just as in the bhakti literature, describes when the rays of the full moon touch the blue lotus, it opens and blossoms. and its fragrance spreads everywhere. And similarly, Lord Chaitanya in his Shikshastakam compares the grace of Krishna, the grace emanating from the holy name, to the light of the full moon. Krishna, God's grace, is like the light of the full moon. And when we allow it to touch the lotus of our hearts, it opens and fully blossoms with love, because the nature of the soul is to love. When the heart blossoms, then the fragrance of that love spreads throughout the entire world. That is our potential, if we just connect to that grace.
Thank you very much.